Hello, bet you weren't expecting to hear from us. I'm Christian Corley and that's James McLean. This is the podcast with a K. We were planning on a bit of a break, do some other podcasts, maybe then come back late summer with some commentaries, that sort of thing. Get Brian back. Well, it's been a bit of a crazy week in the world of Doctor Who, so we thought we'd better attend to that. Maybe right a few wrongs, I don't know. Depends how it will go. Where shall we start, James?
I don't know. I must admit, I've kind of zoned out on Doctor Who in the last few days. I've seen, obviously, I saw the debacle, a little of the debacle with Peter Davison. I was alerted a little more about it through Janet Fielding's Twitter, which incidentally I noticed through the Twitter feed on our website at beyondcasterbras.com.
So, oh, nice plug. Thank you.
Well, that's what I thought. Might as well mention.
Yeah, it was a nice tweet by Janet Fielding. Actually, you said there's this thing with Peter Davison. Peter has, as you recall from the last podcast, he's not a gentleman who considers the idea of a female doctor to be, I suppose, his cup of tea. But he's not resistant. He's not saying, don't do it. He's just saying his preference is not, he's not keen on it. But he recognises that, in his own words, they need to open it up. And that was a few years he said that. His opinion seems to have not changed. I hope he's not forced into some sort of retraction. He's basically been quizzed about it a few times over the weekend. It's been the San Diego Comic-Con. The big Comic-Con. And it appears half of the Doctor Who world has been there. The series, the TV series, Peter Capaldi and Stephen Moffat and Pearl Mackey, Mark Gatiss as well, they've been there. And it seems Big Finish have been there as well with presumably... That's why Colin Baker and Peter Davison were there. But they were interviewed together, and one, I think we said last time that Colin Baker was in favour, and we played a clip of Peter Davison from a couple of years ago, not in favour. And this was picked up by some newspapers, and the Telegraph ran a story on it. And then this story was then picked up by various people, spotted it, and thought, considering that Peter Davison's maybe not playing ball, I suppose maybe he's not being progressive enough, which is fair. You know, everyone's entitled to their opinions on everything. Ed Miliband, the Americans won't know who Ed Miliband is. They may have heard of his brother, but Ed Miliband is the Labour MP for Labour North. He's previously the Labour Party leader here in the UK until he stood down in 2015 after losing a general election. On Friday or Saturday, he tweeted an article in the Telegraph with the phrase, "In which Doctor Who travels back in time to meet the views of the 1950s. Jodie Whittaker is a great model for my two boys, thanks." Yeah. All right, fair enough, the second part of the sentence. 9,945 retweets. 37,400 likes. And as a result of this, storm in a teacup, and Peter Davison has walked away from Twitter. Yeah. That's not on, is it?
Yeah. No, it's not.
It's not on. Peter Davison's been getting a load of personal abuse. Peter Davison is probably the greatest ambassador that Doctor Who has had over the years. He's been at it the longest in the ambassadorial role. I just cannot... I'm struggling to compute this. I really am.
I think this is the problem, though, with Twitter. And I think it's a... I think it blurs the boundaries and the lines between different sorts of people. Mm. And I kind of feel that, in a sense, Twitter is extremely powerful, potent for promotional tools, for certainly for actors and celebrities. And I can see that. And it's obviously a nice idea to touch base with people. But I think because those boundaries become so blurred, that it becomes very hard, especially at the moment where... And I'm not quite sure what the Twitter issue is. I'm not quite sure whether this is just people being dicks because they just don't really understand any better.
Well, I think there's a bit of misquoting taking place in the Telegraph article as well. Or selective quoting.
I mean, I saw the story a few... I saw the story, but I didn't read the Guardian article or the article that was misquoted. So this is the bit where I don't know much, but I kind of imagine that he'd have probably had a few arse-ish comments for, because the story I originally heard was, I think the Radio Times ran it, mm-hmm. was that Peter Davison said that, you know, he wasn't keen on a new on a female doctor because he felt it was taking from male role models, but he was very happy that they got this very strong actress and he thought she would do fine. Mm-hmm. And then their story was that Colin Baker turned and sort of said, "Don't be stupid, Peter. It'll be fine." And that was the story as I saw it initially. And then I saw the stuff from Janet Fielding. So between that, which I believe was at convention, that was that came through. Yeah. Was it a panel?
The two of them, I think.
Right, and then the thing with Janet Fielding sort of saying, you know, you've got to lay off Peter, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But so what element of the story happened after that?
Well, basically, Peter issued a tweet early hours, late Sunday, early Monday, basically saying he wasn't doing Twitter anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, what was the misquote that?
Well, yeah, there's selective quote. It's not a misquote. It's a selective quote. It's basically not telling the whole story. So it's pretty much as you would expect. Let me just find it because I've just gone and turned it off again. Because I did incorrectly assume we were just going to move away from it then.
I just to say I've not been very clear on the story, so maybe there's others who, like me, who have read selective articles, and I certainly wasn't aware of the Ed Miliband thing.
Yeah, I only found about it this evening. But it's pretty much, it's very similar to the Radio Times article, basically.
But I mean, there's still the same issue is that I think for celebrities as well, I kind of think it should be something that they just stay away. I think it's good to have gatekeepers on people of intense interest or selective interest, because I think you'll get people who join in the fray who are not. You'll get some who are people who have just loudly spoken. But either way, they're stripped of the decorum they might have if they entered an official venue or met them face to face. And they might not even be those sort of people who would. They may be people who just see a sort of bigger conversation going on, see a stupid previous old doctor say something and then give them a piece of their mind. You know, it could be that sort of thing. Mm. And nothing to do with fandoms, but it does therefore push away people like Peter away from fandoms in the same way.
Which is a big shame because it's not just because what he's done for Doctor, just like his entire presence on Twitter has been amusing from beginning to end. He's always had something witty to say. He just seems to be a witty chap. We loved the thing that he did with the Doctor anniversary, didn't we?
Well, the Five-ish Doctors, I rewatched that the other day, and as someone who doesn't really like fan humour, you know, it was really on the mark. It was very clever in a lot of places in a way that you didn't imagine someone who is inside the bubble would see so clearly, if you see what I mean.
And then there's the other bit as well, isn't there, which I think was related to it, was sort of where he's kind of in David Tennant's house.
Yeah.
Which I can't remember the exact details to it, but it's like he's there sort of in quotes again, and David wants him to leave, which is amusing. Listen, I don't suppose for a moment Peter Davison is listening to us, but hello if you are, Peter.
I think it'd be nice. I think if people do feel like supporting them, I think they could probably they could support him through people like Janet Fielding
absolutely. Well, and link her into his Twitter account doesn't appear to be closed. I think he's just going to leave it where it is, hopefully.
But that, I think that would be nice.
I think that sort of thing
would actually get back. And I think there needs to be a little more support because he's done a lot for the show. Yes. And I always get the impression he's a professional actor who does. I've enjoyed all my life. I'm still watching Going Through All Creatures Great and Small at the moment. And Campion.
And an underrated comedy actor as well.
He is. He's brilliant. And writer and director, as the Five-ish Doctor showed. And the whole thing was very smooth. So, yeah, I think that's the only thing we can say is that try and show him that it's not about fandom. Because it would be very hard to see from inside the bubble. From
I
would have
put it in a bit of quick context, okay?
Yeah.
If Peter's listening or anyone who can speak to Peter and just pass him on this, 328 million people use Twitter. 2 billion people use Facebook.
Hmm.
Now, there's even more Instagram users than there are Twitter users. And this is monthly users from June 2017, or various months in 2017, just like averages. So basically, Twitter means nothing. Twitter's going to die in the next couple of years. So just...
That'd be good.
He's basically a trendsetter. He's getting off Twitter early. So that's that. We love you, Peter. basically. Forget the nonsense. But yeah, it hasn't been a great week in Doctor Who. There is some other things that have happened. We should probably mention that what has happened at Comic Con is that there's been a trailer for the Doctor Who Christmas special.
Yeah.
I'm struggling with the title of this episode. Is it Twice Upon a Time?
Yeah, something like
yes,
that.
Yes, it is. Yes. We'll probably talk about that title maybe at Christmas because, yeah. Now, a few days ago, we learned that the British actor and playwright Trevor Baxter, who's best known to Doctor Who fans, as Professor George Lightfoot in the Talons of Wang Chung mm-hmm. and Big Finish's fantastic spin-off series featuring Lightfoot and Henry Jago, the Companion Chronicles, and the Jago and Lightfoot series. He's died. He passed away, sadly. He was 84. Massively long career as an actor. Lots of plays written as well. He's
not long enough.
Adapted.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry?
I said not long enough.
Not long enough, no. He was a great actor as well. I love the fact that when he played Professor Lightfoot, he looked like he was knocking 70.
Yeah, scary.
Yeah, he was probably about the same age as I am.
Mm. I did actually work this out the other day.
Did you?
A few months ago, I did. I think it was for Beyond Castell. No, Beyond Castell. The Doctor Who Companion, I reviewed one of the Jago and Lightfoot. I think I reviewed for them the first one.
Right.
And so I sort of did a bit of research because I couldn't believe it. I was just thinking, how old is he?
Yeah.
Because he looks so old. And yeah, I think he's a little old. He was a little older than us, but it does. Yeah, it does sort of blow your mind a bit.
I suppose that's why they call it acting, isn't it?
Absolutely, but true. But I mean, I think what was so, I think I'm out. I can't remember if I've mentioned this before, or whether I've mentioned, or whether I did it in the article. But I think it was kind of amazing how he. And to be fair, I think Jago was probably the harder character to step back into. But I thought Trevor was just smooth, flawless in the audio adventures. He just came straight into it, and you know, was just perfect. It just felt like going back in time. Jago, I think, took an episode or so to find that Jagoism. But, yeah, Trevor was brilliant. He just slipped back in there and just didn't feel like it was a person 40 years beyond. It was great.
Yeah, I'm not sure what a Jagoism might be, but I like it. It's a nice word.
Hamming in a very specific rhythm. I think that was it. And I think it took him a while to find that rhythm because it is quite specific.
Mm.
It's one of the most memorable things of Talon. And if anyone could just do it or anyone could just ham it, it wouldn't be special. But I think it's special because he had a certain style.
Yeah.
And it took him about an episode of Big Finish, I think, at least before he found it again.
He's a good actor, Trevor Benjamin, as well, though, in his own right.
Because he is, absolutely.
He's very good at doing those big roles, isn't he? But he's also very good at the understated ones. He does it in Doctor Who. If you just take Sir Keith Gold in Inferno and then compare that with Jago.
Absolutely, and I think that's the point I'm trying to make. Mm. Is it's nothing against. I mean, he did the role in the first episode of the Big Finish ones. It was great, and he was fun, and he was comical. But I think it just took him that extra one just to find that rhythm because it's so specific. And you're talking about a rhythm that he did 40 years ago.
40 years ago, yeah.
That's a long time ago to then have to pick that up and just find it straight away, and replicate it because you're not even doing a new character; you're doing an old character. So you've not got the freedom to just sort of try and make it as you would like to do it now. To some degree, you've got to emphasize what you did before. And as I say, it took him, I think, that episode to refine that Jagoism. While I think maybe, as I say, Trevor had a slightly easier role because it's a little more straight. But even then, they're both very distinctive, those characterizations. And I'd say even he's, even Trevor's was still slightly quite unique, wasn't he? He was a very unique, Lightfoot was a pretty unique character in the way that he spoke. You can hear it straight away.
Mm.
And given that we have so many Thespian actors, Royal Shakespeare actors in particular, you know, to actually sound nuanced and specific can be quite hard, you know, amongst a crowd of them. But there you go. Yeah, it's very sad. And then there was another one, wasn't there, as well?
There was. Sadly, Deborah Watling has passed away. Now, she's, if you're unaware, she was companion to the second Doctor.
Mm.
She played Victoria Waterfield.
And sadly, I think probably there's the saddest thing about. Well, no, this isn't the saddest thing, but from a perspective of history, is that she's probably one of the companions which we have the least of.
Yes.
In terms of stories.
Material, yeah.
Materials. For the amount of time she was in. I mean, Dodo obviously has very little, but then she wasn't in for very long either. So, but Victoria's got, you know, so much loft, which is why I think so many people, a lot of people listening, perhaps won't remember her performance as well. They'll obviously know who she was, but like me, they won't be that attuned, because how many did we lose, you know, or partially lose of hers?
Well, she her first appearance was Evil of the Daleks, and her last proper appearance is Fury from the Deep, although she did appear in something called Dimensions Intime. I'm not sure what that is.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's what most people like to think.
So we've Evil of the Daleks, Tomb of the Cybermen, Abominable Snowmen, Ice Warriors, Enemy of the World, Fear of the Deep, Fury from the Deep.
Yeah, it's quite a few, and they're big episodes. Some of them are big episodes.
Yeah, some of them are big episodes. Yeah, but that's yeah. So that's that basically. That's what she did, and she's in Downtime as well, which a lot of people tend to forget.
Yes,
about
Downtime.
Days.
Downtime. Yeah, I totally forgot about Downtime. Yeah. I had to think about that. Yeah, no. Yeah, there's Downtime and Dimensions of Timmy as well. Yes, yeah. Which
and she's done a few audios as well. The Great Space Elevator, Emperor of Eternity, Power Play with Colin Baker, The Black Hole and the Story of Extinction, and the Short Ships audio as well.
And she's also very active in conventions as well.
Yeah,
a lot
she
of people
was, wasn't she? Was everywhere.
Reminding everyone of their experience.
Well, she was at the the Missing Episodes unveiling that Gareth Cavana went to on our behalf many years ago. For the Enemy of the World and Web of Fear.
Mm.
Back there, she was one of the people there. For obvious reasons.
Obvious
she's
reasons,
in them.
Yeah, fair
but,
enough.
Yeah, and, fair but, yeah, she, and she was always... Was she one of the people who popped up on Pointless as well?
Oh, I can't remember. They all sort of...
They
slide.
Do all merge into one, don't they, Pointless episodes?
Yes.
Whatever the theme is, yeah. I'd agree with that, yeah.
Well, that's it, because their themes are so vague. It could be like Saturday night stuff, history, people who've got old. You know, it's... you know, they are very vague.
Yes. Indeed. Yeah, so... she sadly passed away earlier this week. You know, there used to be this thing, and it's not the most pleasant thing to talk about, but there used to be this thing among Doctor Who fans, and I think hopefully this is gone now, this is put in the past now. This thing whereby Doctor Who fans would get a bit antsy when someone passed away because they didn't know everything about Doctor Who from that person. Thanks to the efforts of the DVD producers, I don't think we have that problem anymore, I'm delighted to say, because he's a very... unsavory, it's an uncomfortable sort of attitude to have towards someone's life, isn't it? You know, they can't die. I don't know everything about Fury from the Deep.
I think it's worse when you think of it in sort of larger issues. When you think of all the people, you know, obviously, like now we've got no one from World War One.
Yeah.
They're all gone, and you know, World War Two is on its way. And that to me is the bigger, you know, I mean, I'm not saying, as I've said on this podcast many times before, I'm a big believer in the importance of all sort of history forms and cultural forms. So Doctor Who is important because it is an aspect of history which has affected so many people. It's circulated around the world. You know, it is an artifact that is worth considering for its historical importance. It's not like something that four people have watched.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's a shame when you've got those people in those really extrinsic nexuses of history which are disappearing. It's far worse. And to be fair, no, she wouldn't. She would have been too young for that. But, you know, you've got people of that era who have passed away now who were, you know, think of John Pertwee, obviously, was a famous one, whose war stories were big, and he's gone. So,
yes, it is a shame. I suppose on the plus side, we do have lots of interviews with people from the past. Which,
yeah,
you know, people, you know, 50 years ago, they didn't have that so much. So
I think it's more, and I think this is a sad thing, it's less about the people dying, as you say. It's the more the fact there's this fear that fans have that eventually there's going to be a point where there is nothing new to learn about Doctor Who. I think that is their worry, that eventually there'll be nothing fresh for them to understand. And that sort of brings home the mortality of life, possibly even as well. That might make them feel mortal, thinking that eventually I'll have sucked up all there is to know on this subject.
Yeah.
And that means that there's only a finite amount of information, which means there's only finite stuff, which means, hell, I'm finite as well. Oh my God, Deborah Wadlick's just died. You know, it's a really weird thing, and I'm sure there's some of that somehow going wrong in there, but yeah.
You're probably right. Yes, you're probably right. So, yeah, I mean, really, that's all we really kind of wanted to talk about this time on the podcast with
AK. Do we need to mention at all anything about the trailer? Do we need to? Is that a little too off base for the sort of slightly mortal levels confined in this podcast of the negativity?
Well, we could talk about it, sure.
I just thought I was just interested in on just very initial reactions and reflections, because there was quite a lot in.
Yeah, there is a lot in there. I'm I want to be overwhelmed. I'm probably simply, to borrow a phrase from you, whelmed. I'm not underwhelmed. I'm just as I said last time, I don't really know whether this is you know, the whole idea of the two doctors isn't 100% chime with me. The prospect of there being a Polly in there is kind of interesting. I'm not. It's just not grabbing me, and I don't know why.
No, it's not. It's not grabbing me either.
So yeah, but like you said, there's a lot in the trailer. There's obviously there's Gatiss as well. Mark Gatiss is appearing. I did fear for one moment he might be doing his John Pertwee impression.
I think it's kind of funny in a sense, just like classic Doctor Who, that you're having the reappearance of same actors again, since he's already appeared in the show, as a new person.
Yes.
But then, you know, that's what this whole episode is about, really, so.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, what do you think of the police boxes? Because that's kind of interesting, because they look like they've done a lot of work to get that police box right. That's pretty incredible.
Well, you're the expert on the police boxes, really. I just admire them. I don't really have a... I don't have a notebook to pen down the differences for each one. So maybe I should be asking you, what do you think of the police
boxes? You just
need
to be looking at the memory. Look, it is as bang on as I could imagine doing for the period. It's probably, if I was to be a little unkind, I think at that point it was a little more mottled. It was in a really bad shape by Troughton's in the texture. Uh-huh. It looks a little clean. But beyond that, actual dimensions. I think that's quite incredible the way they've done. It's ridiculously pointless in a sense. I mean, if it's not the original Polly and it's not the original Hartnell and somehow it's the original everything else, it's like, well, does it have to be original? Because everything else can't be. But it's interesting. And some of the interesting lights that they had in the shot of Gatiss with the roundels behind, they've got some interesting light effects. It'll be interesting to see how they do inside that.
Well, I've never really understood why it went fat.
the
police box, yeah.
Yeah, that's basically the in-house quick rush design. They had the an external commissioner who you can see the work, Matt Savage, I think it is. You find it on the internet. He was doing a mark, you know, a proper Mark II Metropolitan one, and then there was issues over the money, and they pulled back, awarded the tender in-house to the department, and so you got this. You got what we got, which was just, I think, done, pulled together quite quickly and quite expensively in the long run, and they've stuck with it. And then I think Savage went again to propose again at 2010, and again he sent one, and there's a shot of it on his site, I think, which again is very Metropolitan, same colours as we've got now, but Metropolitan, and again they just went with the internal one. And that's probably changing, I think, next year, but... So that's why we've got this inaccurate police box, which doesn't really conform to anything apart from being a little... The height is pretty much what you'd get in a Met box, despite the fact that it'd been concrete rather than wood, for rather obvious reasons, in a rainy country. But, you know, yes, you can varnish, but you've got risks of the varnish peeling and, you know, suddenly it all warps out. And I think there were some wood ones as well, but by and large, they were concrete. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. But yeah, that's a really good replication of the Pertwee one, especially the scale and size. And as you say, you can see that in the shot in the trailer, the size of the Hartnell, Troughton, Pertwee one to the Smith Capaldi one.
It's tiny.
It's tiny, yeah. But that's because it had to be, because there was the issue of studio size. So they needed to reduce the size from the Met box so they could fit them in the studio. And obviously the original Hartnell one was a little bigger because it had a slightly higher roof. But by and large, that was the scale it was.
Well, so... I suppose as well, one would hope that it makes the whole idea of bigger on the inside just that little bit more impressive.
Um,
you know, if you've got a smaller box, it looks a bit pokier than the other one.
Yeah, it does. And it, I suppose they do look a little ridiculous, but then I kind of like the fact that, I suppose it's not from the lover of continuity in me likes it, but there is a part of me which still feels like it's so unnecessary. This should be a story that, I don't know, it just feels so indulgent that it doesn't really engage me. This sort of stuff I love, but, you know, I watch it for a story. I watch it to see something new and fiddling around with time. And the, yeah, we've had recasting before. I just don't think this is really, seeing a new Polly and Bradley, I find it sometimes a little jarring, and I'd rather be watching something new and just enjoying the past being the past rather than constantly revisiting it. But that's me. So I'm sure a lot of fans will love it. We'll see.
I do agree with you. I do find it jarring as well. I wonder if they would have done it if Big Finish hadn't already gone down that road. I don't really know. I'm just looking at Matt Savage's concept art actually for the Cyberman, which is rather, it's a nice combination of Invasion and Earthshock Cybermen. It's very nice.
Yeah,
it's a bit video gamey in some ways.
He does a lot of nice, interesting designs. His console designs are really quite funny. But his police box is, his police boxes were quite, as I say, quite realistic. And I wouldn't be entirely surprised
if
they, I'm just trying to think whether they'd use that new box in the new series.
In the new series. Well, I won't be surprised. We'll see, won't we?
We'll see. I have a feeling they'll go brand new personally. Well, I just don't think it's quite stylized enough for what they'll want. It's too boxy.
Yeah. No, resist the temptation to make a sexist joke. Or a joke that could be misconstrued as sexist, when in fact it's just a joke. That brings us to the end of this week's podcast with a K. We will be going off to do some other podcasty things now. Maybe not straight away, but in the succeeding days. So look out for those. And do pay a visit to, I'm sounding incredibly vague, do pay a visit to beyondcastobus.com, where you'll find a whole host of podcasts by us, and you might even find links to podcasts by us with us in that aren't for Beyond Castorbris once I sort out that page, because all three of us have appeared in other podcasts, so that's going to happen. And please leave us a comment on iTunes. That'd be nice as well. That, just between us, that'd be great. Until next time, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
This is a Beyond Castorbris podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCastorbris.com.